is clothes. It didn't take people too long before they counted how many pairs of pants and shirts Rufus and Cody had. That was easy to do because Rufus only had 2 shirts and 2 pairs of pants, and Cody only had 3 shirts and 2 pairs of pants. They also had 1 pair of blue jeans that they switched off on. Some days Rufus wore them, and some days Cody rolled the legs up and put them on. It's really funny how something as stupid as a pair of blue jeans can make you feel real, real bad, but that's what happened to me. We had been sort of secret friends for a couple of weeks before people really started getting on them about not having a bunch of clothes. Me and Rufus and Cody were on the bus right behind the driver one day when Larry Dunn walked up to our seat and said, "Country Cornflake, I noticed how you and the Little Flake switch off on them pants, and I know Fridays is your day to wear 'em, but I was wondering if the same person who gets to wear the pants gets to wear the drawers that day, too." Of course, the whole bus started laughing and hollering. Larry Dunn went back to his seat real quick before the driver had a chance to tell anybody the secret he knew about Larry's mama. I looked over at Cody. He had the blue jeans on today and was pulling the waist out to check out his underpants. Maybe it was because everybody else was laughing. Maybe it was because Cody had such a strange look on his face while he peeked at his underpants. Maybe it was because I was glad that Larry hadn't jumped on me, but whatever the reason was, I cracked up too. Rufus shot a look at me. His face never changed, but I knew right away I'd done something wrong. I tried to squeeze the rest of my laugh down. Things got real strange. Instead of Rufus jabbering away at me 1 mile a minute in school, he scooted around in his seat so all I could see was his back. He didn't follow me out on the playground either, and he acted like he didn't want my sandwiches anymore. Ever since Mama had met Rufus and I told her about sharing my sandwiches with him, she had been giving me 4 sandwiches and 3 apples for lunch. When I saw him and Cody weren't going to come under the swing at lunchtime, I set the bag with their sandwiches and apples in it on the swing set. The bag was still there when the bell rang. They quit sitting next to me on the bus, too, and Rufus didn't show up that night to play. After this junk went on for 3 or 4 days, I sneaked the pillowcase full of dinosaurs out and headed over to where Rufus lived. I knocked on the door, and Cody answered. I thought things might be back to being okay because Cody gave me a great big smile and said, "Hiya, Kenny. You want to talk to Rufus?" "Hi, Cody." "Just a minute." Cody closed the door and ran back inside. 1 minute later, Rufus came to the door. "Hey, Rufus, I thought you might want to play dinosaurs. It's your turn to be the Americans." Rufus looked at the pillowcase, then back at me. "I ain't playing with you no more, Kenny." "How come?" "I knew, though. I thought you was my friend. I didn't think you was like all them other people," he said. "I thought you was different." He didn't say this stuff like he was mad. He just sounded real, real sad. He pulled Cody out of the doorway and shut it. Rufus might as well have tied me to a tree and said, "Ready, aim, fire." I felt like someone had pulled all my teeth out with a pair of rusty pliers. I wanted to knock on his door and tell him I am different, but I was too embarrassed, so I walked the dinosaurs back home. I couldn't believe how sad I got. It's funny how things could change so much and you wouldn't notice. All of a sudden, I started remembering how much I hated riding the bus. All of a sudden, I started remembering how lunchtime under the swing set alone wasn't very much fun. All of a sudden, I started remembering that before Rufus came to Flint, my only friend was the world's biggest dinosaur thief, L.J. Jones. All of a sudden, I remembered that Rufus and Cody were the only 2 kids in the whole school, other than Byron and Joey, that I didn't automatically look at sideways. 2 days later, Mama asked me to sit in the kitchen with her for a while. "How's school?" "Okay." I knew she was fishing to find what was wrong and hoped it wouldn't take her too long. I wanted to tell her what I'd done. "Where's Rufus been? I haven't seen him lately." It was real embarrassing, but tears just exploded out of my face, and even though I knew she was going to be disappointed in me, I told Mama how I had hurt Rufus's feelings. "Did you apologize?" "Sort of, but he wouldn't let me talk to him. Well, give him some time, then try again. Yes, Mama. The next day after school, when the bus pulled up at Rufus's stop, Mama was standing there. When Rufus and Cody got off, they said, "Hi, Mrs. Watson," and gave her their big smiles. The three of them walked toward Rufus's house. Mama put her hand on Rufus's head while they walked. Mama didn't say anything when she got home, and I didn't ask her, but I kept my eye on the clock. At exactly 5:30, there was a knock, and I knew who it was, and I knew what I had to do. Mama and Joey were in the living room, and when they heard the knock, everything there got real quiet. Rufus and Cody were standing on the porch, smiling a mile a minute. I said, "Rufus, I'm sorry." He said, "That's okay." I wasn't through, though. I really wanted him to know I am different. He said, "Shoot, Kenny, you think I don't know? Why you think I came back? But remember, you said it's my turn to be the Americans." People started moving around in the living room again. I guess I should have told Mama that I really appreciated her helping me get my friend back, but I didn't have to. I was pretty sure she already knew. Froze Up Southern Folks. Because she'd been born in Alabama, Mama didn't really know anything about the cold. Even though she'd lived in Flint for 15 years, she still thought cold weather could kill you in a flash. That's why me and Joey were the warmest kids at Clark Elementary School. Mama wouldn't let us go out on a cold winter day unless we were wearing a couple of t-shirts, a couple of sweaters, a couple of jackets, and a couple of coats. Plus gigantic snow pants that hung on your shoulders by suspenders, plus socks and big, black, shiny rubber boots that closed with 5 metal buckles. We wore so many clothes that when we pulled our final coat on, we could barely bend our arms. We wore so many clothes that when Byron wasn't around, the other kids said stuff like, "Here come some of them weird Watsons doing their mummy imitations." But the worst part of this was having to take all this stuff off once we got to school. It was my job to make sure Joey got out of her coats and things okay, so after I took all of my junk off, I went down to the kindergarten and started working on hers. Joey usually looked like a little zombie while I peeled the coats and jackets off of her. She got so hot inside all this stuff that when I finally got down to the last layer, she'd be soaking wet and kind of drowsy looking. I took her hood off and unwrapped the last scarf that was around her head. When that last scarf came off, there was always a real nice smell, like Joy was a little oven, and inside all these clothes she'd baked up her own special perfume with the smell of shampoo and soap and the pomade Mama put in her hair. That was the only part I didn't mind. I loved sticking my nose right on top of Joey's head and smelling all those nice things baked together. Mama always kept a little towel in Joey's last jacket's pocket so I could make sure her face and hair were dry. "Kenny," she said one time while I wiped the sweat from her forehead and hair, "can't you do something to stop Mommy from making us get so hot?" "I tried, Joey. Mama thinks she's protecting us from the cold." I started trying to get Joey's shoes out of her boots. Whoever invented these boots should be shot, because once the boots got a hold of your shoes, they wouldn't let them go for anything. I pulled everything off Joey's foot and gave her the boot while I reached my hand inside to tug on the shoe. We pulled and pulled, but it seemed like the harder we pulled, the harder the boot sucked the shoe back in. "Maybe Byron will help make Mommy stop if we let him know how hot we get." Joey was too young to understand that Byron didn't care about anything but himself. He was kind of nice to her, though, and didn't treat her like he treated me and other kids. We tugged and tugged, and the shoe started coming out an inch at a time. Finally, it made that funny sound like water going down the drain and slid out of the boot. Whew! I tied Joey's shoes back on her feet and used her towel to wipe my own forehead. I couldn't wait until I was old enough to not listen to what Mama told me. The next morning, Mama was burying Joey in all her clothes again. Joey was doing the usual whining and complaining. "Mommy, can't I wear just one jacket? I get too hot. And besides, When I wear all this junk, I'm the laughing stock of the morning kindergarten. Mama's hand came up to cover her mouth, but she got serious when she said, Joey, I don't want you to be the laughing stock, but I don't want you catching a cold. You've got to keep bundled up out there. It's colder than you think. This cold is very dangerous. People die in it all the time. Joey pouted and said, Well, if they die in it all the time, how come we don't see any frozen people when we go to school? Mama gave Joey a funny look and pulled her hood over her head. Sweetheart, do what Mommy says. It's better to be too warm than too cold. Joey whined a little more while Mama put her boots on her. Me and Byron went outside and waited on the porch. He was trying to look cool, but I said to him anyway, Man, I hate taking all that stuff off Joey when we get to school. She whines and cries the whole time. I stood next to him and looked at him sideways. Seems to me like you got a real bad memory. Who you think took all that stuff off your little behind all these years? What goes around, goes around. I was surprised he'd said anything, since Byron thought it was cool not to answer stuff when someone younger than you said it. But he wasn't being completely nice. While I was talking, he kept moving around me, so if I wanted to look at him sideways, I'd have to move too. It must have looked like we were doing some kind of square dance with me moving around like one foot was nailed to the porch. Yeah, but I didn't cry and whine. Byron kept circling me and put his hand behind his ear. What? I know you didn't say what I think you said. You were the cryingest little clown there ever was. With Byron walking around me like that, we must have looked like we were in the Wild West, and I was a wagon train, and Byron was the Indian circling, waiting to attack. Byron changed directions and started going around the other way, and I acted like my other foot was nailed to the porch and started following him sideways that way. I knew there wasn't much point saying a whole bunch more to him, so I said, mostly to myself, Man, I hate listening to Joey whining when I take all that junk off her at school. Well, listen here, he said. I'ma help you out. I know it's kind of stupid to think that someone who's teasing you by going around in circles is going to help you out, but I said anyway, how? He kept going round and round me. I bet we look like the solar system, with me being the sun and Byron being the orbiting Earth. I'll talk to Joey, you know, kind of put her mind at ease. This didn't sound too good, and I got sick of Bai teasing me, so I let the Earth orbit by itself. Joey finally came out, and the three of us walked toward the bus stop. Byron started right in. Baby sis, I know you don't like wearing all them clothes, right? Right, Byron. They get too hot. Yep, I'm hip. But you know there's a good reason why you gotta have all that stuff on. Why? Only me and Kenny wear this much junk. Yeah, but what you don't know is that Mama's only doing what's right. There's something she don't want you two to know yet, but I know you some real mature kids, so I'ma tell you anyway. Okay, tell us. I wanted to know, too. Even though I was in fourth grade, I fell for a lot of the stuff Byron came up with. He made everything seem real interesting and important. All right, but when Mama finally do tell you guys this stuff, you gotta act like you surprised. Deal? Both me and Joey said, deal. Byron looked around to make sure no one was listening, then said, Have you ever noticed early in the morning some of the time you wake up and hear garbage trucks? Yeah. And have you noticed how when you get up and go to school, you almost never see them trucks? Yeah. And have you ever noticed how when you do see one of them trucks, it got a real big door in the back of it that opens and shuts so you can't see what's inside? Yeah. And have you noticed how that door is too big for even the biggest garbage can in the world? Yeah. And Joey, did you notice how Mama got kind of nervous and didn't answer your question about not seeing people being froze up on the street? Yeah. Byron looked around and made us get real close to him. Okay. Now this is the part you're gonna have to look surprised at when Mama tells you about it, but before I tell you, you're gonna have to practice acting surprised so I don't get in trouble for letting you know, okay? Yeah. Kenny, you first. I made my eyes get real big and threw my mouth open. Not bad, but try it with some sound. I made my eyes get real big, threw my mouth open, and said, "What the?" Perfect. Baby sis, your turn. Joey did exactly what I did. That's good, but I think we need some action. Do all that stuff and throw your arms up like you just heard some real shocking stuff. We did. Cool. Now do it together 3 times. Go. Me and Joey did it 3 times. Then Byron said, "Listen real careful." He looked around to make sure the coast was clear. "There's a good reason Mama makes you wear all them clothes, and it's got to do with them big doors on the back of the garbage trucks. Dig?" Me and Joey nodded our heads the best we could with all of those clothes on. "You see, some of them trucks ain't real garbage trucks at all." "Joey, you was right. Every cold morning like this, the streets is full of dead, froze people. Some of the time they freeze so quick they don't even fall down. They just stand there, froze solid." Joey was believing every word. I wasn't too sure. "But you notice that not everybody gets froze like that. It's just them folks from down south who got that thin, down-home blood who freeze so quick. And you know, Mama ain't from Flint. She grew up in Alabama, and that means half of y'all's blood is real thin. So Mama's worried that one morning it's gonna be cold enough to freeze you all. That's where them fake garbage trucks come in. Every morning, they go around picking the froze folks off the street, and they need them big doors because someone who got froze don't bend in the middle, and they wouldn't fit in no regular ambulance." Joey looked like she was hypnotized. Her mouth was open and her eyes were bugging. "But both of you gotta swear never, ever to try and look in the back of one of them trucks. I did it once, and I'ma tell you, there ain't nothing more horrible than seeing hundreds of dead, froze-up Southern folks crammed up inside a garbage truck. It's a sight that I'ma carry to my grave with me. So, Joey, don't be crying and whining when you put all them clothes on. It would break my heart to see my own family froze solid so as they got throwed in one of them fake garbage trucks." Joey started crying. Byron told me, "Give my regards to Clark, Poindexter," and left me there to wipe Joetta's tears. I've got to admit, Joey didn't do any more whining when she had to get into her winter clothes. The only good thing about Mama being afraid of the cold was that we were the only kids at Clark who got to wear real leather gloves. Most of the other kids had to wear cheap plastic mittens that would start to crack up after 2 or 3 snowball fights or one real cold day. Some of them had to wear socks on their hands, and some of them just had to scrunch their arms up in the sleeves of their jackets. But Mama made sure we got real leather gloves with real rabbit's fur on the inside of them. And I'm not bragging, but we got to go through 2 pairs a year each. At the end of every winter, Mama and Dad would go downtown to Montgomery Ward's when gloves were going on sale and buy 6 pairs for us kids. The only problem with having 2 pairs of gloves was that if you lost 1 pair, you had to wear the next pair kindergarten style. That meant Mama would run a string through the sleeves of your coat and tie 2 safety pins on the ends of the string. Then she'd pin your gloves to the string, and it was impossible to lose the gloves because every time you took them off, they'd just hang from your coat. I pulled a trick on Mama to help Rufus. For a while, I shared my first pair of gloves with him. I'd keep the right-hand glove, and he'd keep the left-hand one. That way, we both could get in snowball fights, and instead of Rufus scrunching both of his hands up in his sleeves, I'd scrunch one of mine, and he'd scrunch one of his. This was okay for a while, but then I figured that if I told Mama I'd lost my first pair, she'd give me the second one, and me and Rufus each would have a full pair of gloves. It worked. Mama put the second pair on my coat kindergarten style and warned me, "This is the last one, Kenny. After this, you won't have anything for the rest of the year, so be very careful." I just about broke out laughing when she held me by the arms and looked right in my eyes and said, "Do you know what frostbite will do to you?" "Yes, Mama." I looked sad on the outside, but on the inside, I was feeling great. I gave Rufus the right-hand glove and everything was fine. For about a week. That's when my second pair of gloves, kindergarten string, safety pins and all, disappeared out of the closet at school. Rufus had to let me borrow one of my old gloves back, and we were back to scrunching one hand each up in our coat sleeves. But since Rufus was now the official owner of the gloves, he got to keep the right-hand one, and I had to wear the left-hand one. 2 days later, Larry Dunn stopped wearing socks on his hands and started wearing a pair of real leather gloves with real rabbit fur on the inside of them. The only difference between my old gloves and Larry's new ones was that mine had been brown and Larry's were black. Me and Rufus found this out when Larry ran up behind us and said, "This is Friday, y'all. Time to do the laundry. Who's gonna be first? Country Cornflake? Cockeye Kenny?" He didn't wait for us to make up our minds and grab me first. He said to Rufus, "If you run away during Cockeye's wash, I'm gonna hunt you down and hurt you bad, boy. This ain't gonna take but a minute, so just stick around." Rufus stood there, looking worried. Larry wasn't like other bullies. He wasn't happy taking a handful of snow and smashing it in your face and running off. Larry gave what he called Maytag washes. With a Maytag wash, you had to go through all of the different cycles that a washing machine did. And even though when Larry gave you a Maytag, all of the cycles were exactly the same, each part had a different name, and the wash wasn't done until you went through the final spin and had snow in every part of your face. Ever since Larry got these new leather gloves, he was giving super Maytag washes because he could grind a whole lot more snow in your face for a whole lot longer since his hands weren't getting as cold. Larry was tearing me up. I was crying even before the first rinse cycle was done, and he finally let me go. After he washed Rufus up, we started walking home, and Rufus said, "Man, he stole your gloves." Who didn't know this? But you couldn't prove it. And besides, my old gloves were brown and Larry's new ones were black. Mine were brown, I said. Rufus dug a chunk of snow out of his jacket and said, "Look." The snow was covered with black. So was all of the snow I pulled out of my outer coat. Larry Dunn had stolen my gloves, then painted them black with shoe polish. I didn't know what to do. Sooner or later, Mama was going to notice I only had one glove, and ever since I'd found out that half of my blood was that thin southern kind, I'd started wondering if frostbite really could do some damage to my hands. I couldn't help myself. I sat on the curb and sniffled a couple of times, and finally cried. Rufus knew this was some real embarrassing stuff, so he sat down beside me, looked the other way, and acted like he didn't see me crying. That's how come we didn't see Bi and Bubhead walk up on us. I was too busy looking down, trying not to be too obvious about crying, and Rufus was too busy pretending he didn't notice that I was. "What you crying about, punk?" I made the mistake of telling Byron about my gloves and Larry Dunn. "Where's he at?"
"Washing kids' faces over by the school."
"Come on." Me and Rufus followed Bi and Bubhead over to Clark. Larry Dunn was giving a super Maytag to a fifth grader. Byron interrupted the final rinse cycle and said, "Let me see them gloves." Larry Dunn said, "I ain't." Bi snatched Larry Dunn's windbreaker with one hand, then touched his own mouth with his other hand. "Bubhead, I thought for sure when I got up this morning that my lips was working fine, and now when I feel 'em like this, they still seem like they moving just right. But if they working fine, how come this little fool ain't doing what I told him to do?"
Buphead shrugged and said, "Maybe the boy's ears is bad."
"Maybe. Maybe I'm gonna have to use deaf people language to talk to him. Maybe I'm gonna have to talk to him like that woman in The Miracle Worker." All the Weird Watsons had seen that show together, and the way they talked to deaf people in that movie wasn't anything like the way Byron was talking to Larry Dunn. Byron's style of deaf language was just to yell real loud and slap the side of Larry's head after each word. "Let me whack, see, whack, them whack gloves, whack, young whack fool, whack, whack, whack." This had to be killing Larry Dunn. Larry didn't cry or anything. He just stared at Bi and said, "I ain't." He talked real tough, but he didn't do a thing when Byron snatched the gloves off of his hands. The palms of the gloves were brown, and the backs were black. Byron threw me the gloves. "Here, Kenny."
"Thanks, Bi."
That would have been fine with me, but Byron wasn't through. "Come here, Kenny." I went and stood where Byron still had the neck of Larry Dunn's skinny little windbreaker wadded up in his fist. "Pop him," Byron said. I gave Larry Dunn a slap on the arm. "I'ma only tell you one more time. Pop him." I hit Larry a little harder. I hoped he'd bend over and act like I'd killed him, but he stood there trying to look cool. Byron kept his word and only told me that one time. Then, when I didn't hit Larry hard enough, Bi punched me in the stomach. Hard. I didn't even feel it because I had all those sweaters and jackets and coats on, but I had more sense than Larry. I acted like I'd been popped by Sugar Ray Robinson and staggered around, then fell on my knees holding my stomach. I said, "Ugh!" A little crowd of kids started bunching up around us, and Byron decided it was time to put on a show. I don't know why bullies always have such a good sense of humor, but they do. Unless you were the one who was in the machine, you'd probably think that Larry Dunn's Maytag washes were pretty funny. And unless it was your jacket that was balled up in Byron's fist with a crowd of kids bunching up, you'd have to say he was pretty funny too. I knew Byron wasn't trying to help me anymore. He was just being mean. "Well, well, well, Mr. Dunn," Bi said. "Today's your lucky day." Bi dragged Larry over to the chain link fence that went all the way around Clark. "You want to know why you're so lucky today?" Larry Dunn didn't say anything, so Byron grabbed his hair and jerked his head up and down a couple of times. "I guess that means yes." The crowd of kids was getting bigger and bigger and was loving this. Not because they wanted to see Larry Dunn get jacked up, but because they wanted to see anybody get it. They'd have been just as happy if it was me or Rufus or someone else. "Well, today's your lucky day because I'm about to make a new movie, and guess what? You gonna be the star." Byron jerked Larry's arms over his head 3 times. Larry Dunn was really tough, not only because he wasn't crying when Bi was going to mess him up, but also because when Byron jerked his arms over his head like that, we all could see that Larry's skinny little windbreaker was ripped under both arms, and Larry just had on a t-shirt underneath it. You'd have to be pretty tough to stand around giving people Maytags on a day as cold as this with those skimpy clothes on. I guess that means you're real excited about being in my flick." "Yeah," Bi said, "but I got some even better news for you." Bi lifted Larry up in the air and threw him. Larry landed on his butt. Someone shouted, "Look at them shoes!" The crowd cracked up. Larry Dunn's tennis shoes had holes in the bottoms, and he'd put pieces of a cardboard box in them to cover the holes. Byron snatched him back to his feet. "Look at that. You so excited about being in my movie that you jumping for joy. Don't you even want to know what the flick's about?" Larry's head got jerked up and down again. "Okay, it's called The Great Carp Escape." I hated watching this. Byron was the only person in the world who could make you feel sorry for someone as mean as Larry Dunn. The Great Carp Escape was about a carp that was trying to get out of a net in the Flint River. The stupid fish would run into the net, get knocked down, then get back up and run into the net all over again. Since he was the star, Larry Dunn had to play the carp, and the fence around Clark was the net. The director of the movie, Byron, didn't like the way the scene was going and made the carp redo it over and over again. "Let's see a little more fins this time, carp," Byron would say, then throw Larry into the fence. Since tennis shoes don't have a lot of grip on the ice, Larry would go into the fence hard and couldn't control what part of him hit first. I knew it really had to hurt to catch yourself on that cold fence with nothing on your hands, not even socks. But Larry Dunn was real, real tough. He had a bloody nose and still didn't cry. I wished I hadn't told Byron about what happened. I wished I just could have gone the rest of the year with one glove. I couldn't stand to see how the movie was going to end, so me and Rufus left. I could hear the chink-chink sound of that carp hitting the net and the screams and laughs of the audience from half a block away.
Nazi parachutes attack America and get shot down over the Flint River by Captain Byron Watson and his flamethrower of death. Byron got caught lighting matches again, and it looked like this time Mama was going to do what she always said she would. That's when Joetta turned on the tears and cried and begged so much that Mama let him off. She swore to him, though, that the next time he got caught starting fires, she was going to burn him. She told us that same sad old story about how when she was a little girl, her house caught on fire, and for 2 years after that, she and her brothers had to wear clothes that smelled like smoke. Even though the story made Mama and Joey get all sad and sobby, it was kind of funny to me and Bai. We'd heard it so many times that Byron even gave it a name. He called it Mama's Smokey the Bear story. I won't have you putting this family in danger. Just once more, Byron Watson, one more time, and you're burned. Then to show Byron how serious she was, Mama raised her right hand and said, I swear that with God as my witness. Bai got put on punishment for a month, but even before a week was gone, he started up again. I was up in the bedroom looking at comic books when I heard Byron go into the bathroom and lock the door. I knew something was up, since he only locked the door when he had something to hide. I sneaked to the bathroom door and peeked through the keyhole. Bai was pretending he was making a movie called Nazi Parachutes Attack America and Get Shot Down Over the Flint River by Captain Byron Watson and his flamethrower of death. I could see that he'd made a bunch of little toilet paper parachutes, and when he yelled, action, he set one of them on fire and dropped it over the toilet. The guy in the Nazi parachute screamed as he floated down in flames and landed in the water with a loud hiss. Before the parachutist was dead, Bai would flush the toilet and the Nazi would go down the drain going glub, glub, glub. When the water was swirling him away, Byron said the only Nazi talk that he knew. Ja hold, mein Führer, auf Wiedersehen. Peeking through the keyhole, I could see Byron's salute to the parachute when he flushed the toilet. Such a brave soldier deserves our respect, he said, so we give him a burial at sea. The toilet stopped glugging and Byron said, not bad, but let's have a little more screaming on the way down, and how about having the flamethrower of death turned up a little bit? He picked up another toilet paper parachute, lit two matches at the same time, set the parachute on fire, yelled, take two, and sent the next Nazi screaming into the toilet. Byron was on take seven when Mama finally wondered why the toilet was being flushed so much and came upstairs to see what was going on. The hole upstairs smelled like a giant match, and she knew something was fishy even before she got to the top step. She moved so quick and quiet that I still had my eyeball in the keyhole when she stepped in the hallway. I looked up, and there she was. Mama, I knew I was going to get it for not turning Byron in, but before I could say anything else, Mama pushed me out of the way and hit the bathroom door with her shoulder like Elliot Ness, the cop on that Untouchables TV show. The door jumped out of her way and banged into the bathtub. Byron turned around and screamed. Nazi number seven hit the water with a hiss. Byron threw his hands up in the air and said, Mama, I... Mama snatched Byron's neck, and stopping just to pick up the matches that Byron had dropped, she dragged him all the way down the stairs. I could see that Mama had forgotten all about me, so I followed right behind. As they went down, Bai's feet touched the steps only one or two times. He looked like one of those ballerinas that danced just on the tips of their toes. Mama had her hand around his throat like it was a baseball bat and was holding him up in the air. I never knew Mama was so strong. They danced into the living room, and Joey started looking nervous. She ran over and huddled up next to me. Mama's eyes got slitty with the eyeballs shooting around from side to side. It was almost too scary to watch, but I kept looking since I knew there was going to be some real big action this time. Joey grabbed a hold of my arm and said, what's going on? What'd he do? She was starting to get jumpy because she'd never seen Mama so mad either. I felt kind of sorry for Byron because Mama hadn't let go of his neck, and even though he was a lot older, we could tell he was just as scared as me and Joetta. He kept pretending he was Daddy Cool, though, and the only way you could tell he was scared to death was by looking at his eyes. Mama kept her hand on Byron's neck and pushed him down on the couch and stood right in front of him. She opened the hand that hadn't been choking him and looked at the matches she'd picked up off the bathroom floor. While one hand had been strangling Byron, the other hand had been strangling the matches. The matches were soaking wet because whenever Mama got scared or nervous or mad, her hands got real sweaty and disgusting. Mama's voice got strange,
hissing like a snake.
Joetta, go out to the kitchen and bring me a book of matches.
But Mommy, Joey said, starting to get all sobby. Joetta, do what I told you.
Mommy, I can't.
The tears really started coming, and Joey was squeezing my arm.
Joetta, go get those matches.
Please, Mommy, he won't do it again, will you, Byron? Promise her. Promise Mommy you won't do it again.
Kenneth,
she turned to me then, go get some matches. This is what I was afraid of. If I didn't go get the matches, I was going to be in worse trouble than I already was with Mama. And if I did go get the matches, I knew Byron would kill me as soon as he got back from the hospital.
Mama, I... Move, young man!
Mama, wait a minute. I can't move. Joey's got me by the arm, and if I move... Mama pointed her finger at Byron and said, don't you move a muscle! We all could tell Mama was super mad because she started talking in that real Southern-style accent. Byron nodded his head, and Mama let go of his throat and stormed into the kitchen. Old Mr. Cool still had great big bug eyes, and as soon as Mama's hand left his neck, his own hands came up and started choking him themselves.
Ooh, Byron, you better get out of here. Go down to Buphead's until Dad gets home. He's probably gonna whip you, but Mama's really gonna burn you, I told him.
Please, Byron, run. Get out of here. Joey let go of my arm and ran over to Byron and tried to pull his fingers from around his throat.
Can't you tell she's not playing?
Joey kept pulling at his hand, but it looked like Byron was hypnotized and he wouldn't move. We all nearly jumped through the roof when the snake woman voice came back into the room and said,
Joetta, move away from him.
Mama was carrying a piece of paper towel, a jar of Vaseline, and a Band-Aid in one hand and a fresh, dry book of matches in the other. She wasn't even going to take him to the hospital. She was going to set him on fire, then patch him up right at home. Joetta saw the Vaseline and went crazy.
Oh, no, Mommy. Let Daddy whip him, please, please.
Joey began pulling her braids and stamping her feet up and down. Please don't set him on fire. Her face was all wet and twisted up, and she looked like a real nut. It was hard to do, but I kind of felt sorry for Byron, though not too sorry, because I knew he deserved whatever happened. First, because he had a chance to escape and didn't take it. And second, because he was being a bad influence on me. Nazi parachutes attack America and get shot down over the Flint River by Captain Byron Watson and his flamethrower of death looked like a real cool movie for me to make, too. If Mama just gave Byron some stupid punishment, then maybe it would be worth it for me to flush some Nazis down the drain myself. But if you got set on fire for doing it, the movie wasn't worth making. So while I felt sorry for Byron because of what was going to happen to him, I did want to see if Mama would keep her word, and I always wondered what part of him she'd burn. His face? His hair? Maybe she'd just scare him by setting his clothes on fire while he was in them. But if she was just going to set his clothes on fire, why did she need Vaseline? I knew Mama was going for skin.
Joetta, move away.
Mama's voice still sounded strange. Joey spread her arms out to the side like a traffic cop and stood between Mama and Byron.
No, Mommy, wait!
Mama gently set Joey to the side, but Joetta kept hopping back with her arms spread to protect Daddy Cool. They wrestled like this a couple of times before Mama finally set all the burning equipment down and sat on the coffee table and pulled Joey into her lap. She wiped Joey's stupid tears away with a paper towel and rocked her back and forth a couple of times, going, shh, honey, shh. When Joey finally stopped crying and blew her nose, Mama said, sweetheart, I'm so proud of you. I know you're trying to protect your brother, and that's a good thing. I know you don't want to see him get hurt, right? Joey sniffed and said, no, Mommy. But honey, some of the time Mama has to do things she doesn't want to do. Now, you really don't think I want to hurt Byron, do you? Joey had to think about this. The matches and the first aid stuff and the crazy look Mama had in her eyes made it seem like hurting Byron was exactly what Mama wanted to do. After Joey didn't say anything, Mama had to answer the question herself.
No, dear. Mama doesn't want to hurt Byron. But I don't want you going to school smelling like smoke either. And I don't want to see you or Kenneth or Daddy or Blackie or Tiger or Flipper or Flapper get burned up either. And if that boy,
Mama's voice got strange again, and we all looked over at Byron, who was still being held on the couch by his own hands. If that boy sets this house on fire with his nonsense, I don't know what I'm gonna do. Mama's real voice was coming back. So, Joetta, don't you see how Mama has to help Byron understand how dangerous and painful fire can be? Don't you see we've tried everything and nothing seems to get through that rock head of his? Joetta thought about her stupid cat and goldfish getting burned up and looked kind of hard over at Byron. But look at him, Mommy. He's really, really scared this time. Maybe he won't. Joetta, he's not that scared. Yet. Then Mama dropped the bomb on Joey. Besides, don't you remember, sweetheart? Don't you remember when this happened last week, I swore to God that if Byron did it again, I would burn him? What do you think? Do you think I should break my word to God? Joey was at the age when you're real religious. She went to Sunday school 3 days a week. Huh, honey? Should I break my word to God? No, Mommy, Joey said. Then she scrunched up her face like she was eating something sour and cried out, Since you promised, I guess you gotta do it. She took a giant breath, then sobbed, Go ahead. Burn him up. Joey climbed off Mama's lap, and Byron's eyes got bigger and bigger, but his traitor hands kept him pinned to the couch. But please, Mommy, don't burn him too bad, okay? Please? Please? Joey was starting up again. Don't worry, sweetheart. I won't. I'm just going to burn his fingers enough so he won't be tempted by fire ever again. Those were like magic words. They snapped Byron right out of the spell Mama put on him. It was like his hands said, Fingers? Did she say she was going to burn someone's fingers? Because when they found out it was them that were going to get burned, they let go of Byron's throat and joined the rest of his body in deciding to wait at Bubhead's until Dad got home. Byron was fast. Mama was faster. He didn't even make it out of the living room before Mama tackled him. Mama sure is a good athlete. She sat on his chest and said, Not this time, Busta. This time you pay. She said, Busta. Byron squirmed around for a second and then did something I'd only seen him do a couple of times before. He started crying. Mama lit a match and grabbed Byron by the wrist and said, Put your finger out. I couldn't believe it. By's finger popped right out. He was hypnotized all over again. Mama's horrible snake woman voice came out again and said, If you ever, ever, the match got closer and closer to Byron's skinny brown finger. Play with, no, if you ever even look at. Byron's hand was shaking and he was crying like a big baby, but his finger still stayed out. Another match in this house. The match was getting closer and closer, and I knew Byron could feel the heat. I will personally, by myself. It was so close now that I thought I could hear the sweat on Byron's finger getting turned into steam and going, psss. I will burn not just one finger. I will burn your entire hand, then send you to juvenile home. Byron closed his eyes and screamed. Right when the fire was going to give him a good roasting, Joetta ran across the room, and sounding like that little engine that thought it could, she blew the match out before it got him. She thought she missed, though, because she stood there huffing and puffing and patooing at the match even after it went out. Mama's hand, Byron's finger, and the match were soaked with Joey's slob. Honey, we agreed, didn't we? Yes, Mommy, Joey looked down and said, but I thought you got him. Not yet, sweetheart, but I'm going to. 4 more times Mama lit a match, and 4 more times Joey patooed them out. Finally, Mama got sick of having slob all over her hand and gave up. That night, Byron had to deal with Dad. No picnic, but a lot better ending to his Nazi Parachutes movie than Captain Byron Watson gets captured and burned alive by the evil snake woman with his own flamethrower of death. Swedish creams and welfare cheese. Mama stuck her head into the living room and said, Byron, I want you and Kenny to go up to Mitchell's and get some milk, a loaf of bread, and a can of tomato paste for dinner. She waved a little piece of paper at us that had the grocery list written on it. How come Kenny can't go by himself? Byron, I want a half gallon of milk, a loaf of bread, and a small can of tomato paste. If you asked Mama why you had to do something and she didn't feel like explaining, she just repeated herself. She was chopping up onions for spaghetti sauce, and I guess the tears made it so she didn't feel like talking. If you were stupid enough to ask your question again, there would be the loudest quiet in the world coming from Mama. If you went totally crazy and asked the question a third time, you might as well tie yourself to a tree and say, "Ready, aim, fire." Byron got the message and jerked up off the couch and walked over to the TV and punched the off knob. I knew this wasn't going to be a fun walk up to Mitchell's. We went into the kitchen. "Give me the money. Just sign for it." "Just what?" "Just tell Mr. Mitchell you want to sign for it." Mama kept whacking the onions. "What? Just go in there and tell Mr. Mitchell I want to sign for some food?" "Your daddy and me made all the arrangements last weekend, Byron. Mr. Mitchell will let us sign for groceries until payday. Lots of people do it." "A half gallon of milk, a loaf of bread, and a small can of tomato paste." Mama started chopping the onions a little harder. "So I ain't got to give him no cash." Whack, whack, whack. All of a sudden, Byron's face jumped like a bell went off in his head. "Wait a minute. I know what this means. We on welfare, ain't we?" I held my breath. If I found out we were on welfare, I was going to really have to get ready to be teased. "No, we are not on welfare." "I can't believe it. You really gonna start serving welfare food in this house? You really gonna make me go embarrass myself by signing a welfare list for some groceries like a blanged peon?" I guess Bai hadn't been counting how many times Mama had repeated herself. She smacked the knife on the kitchen counter and jumped right up in Bai's face. "Listen here, Mr. High and Mighty, since you just got to know, food is food. You've eaten welfare food in this house before, and if need be, you'll eat it again. Don't come playing that nonsense with me. I already told you, this is not welfare food. You got about 5 seconds to have that door hit you in the back. Kenny, move!" Bai pouted and walked real fast up to Mitchell's, so I had to kind of run along to keep up with him. He didn't say anything while we got the stuff Mama wanted. He just snatched the things off the shelves. Then he dropped the bomb on me. "You go get in line and hold our spot. I'ma look at some comics for a minute. When you get up to the register, I'll come and tell him how we're going to pay." Oh, man, I knew what that meant. Bide figured out a way not to get embarrassed. He was going to hide until after I'd signed for the groceries. I was going to be the one who got embarrassed. I couldn't argue or anything, so now it was me who was pouting. Byron disappeared around the comic book rack. "Hi, Kenny."
"Hi, Mr. Mitchell."
"This all you want?"
"Uh-huh."
He took the groceries and rang them up on the cash register. "That's $1.23. I saw Bai's head come peeking around the comics.
This has got to go on the welfare list," I said, kind of quiet.
Mr. Mitchell twisted his face up.
"On the what?"
I said real low so only Mr. Mitchell could hear.
"We just found out we got put on welfare, and we got to sign this food up on the welfare list."
Byron's head disappeared again. Mr. Mitchell laughed.
"Kenny, this isn't a welfare list. It just means your daddy's gonna pay all at once instead of a few times every week."
"Really?"
Mr. Mitchell reached under the counter and opened up a little brown box. He pulled out a bunch of yellow cards, and I could see Watson was written on the top one of them. He wrote $1.23 on the first line and said, "Sign here." Then pointed to a spot next to the $1.23 I wrote, "Kenneth Watson," and gave him back the pen.
"That's it?"
"That's it."
He put the groceries in a brown paper bag and handed them to me.
"See you, Mr. Mitchell."
The second I walked out of the store, Byron was next to me and he was in a lot better mood.
"Man, I can't believe it. We just had a chance to get a bag full of free food and all we took was some stupid milk, a loaf of bread, and a can of tomato sauce."
Byron's good mood started getting to me, too. He was smiling and even put his arm around my shoulder as we walked. I couldn't help myself. It felt so grown up to have Bai walking with me like that, I started laughing right along with him. His mood was so much better that he even took the bag of groceries from me. Most of the time when Mama made us go to Mitchell's, Byron would make me carry the bags from the store right up to the front porch. Then he'd take them from me so Mama would think he'd carried them the whole way. but now he started carrying them 4 blocks away from home.
This is just too much. All you gotta do is sign that stupid card, and that old fool Mitchell will give you what you want. Too much.
Now that Bai was happy, I had 2 questions I wanted to ask him. First, he'd said a word that I'd never heard before, and since he said it in front of Mama, I knew it wasn't cussing. As we walked home with his arm around my shoulder, I thought I might get a real answer from him. Byron, what's a peon?
A peon? Didn't you see the Magnificent Seven? Peons was them folks what was so poor that the rich folks would just as soon pee on them as anything else.
I knew this had to be a lie. You could get yourself in a lot of trouble if you listened to half the stuff Byron said, but I asked my next question anyway. What do you think the welfare food was that Mama said she gave us? I wished I hadn't asked, 'cause this brought back his bad mood. He took his arm from around my shoulder and said, I know what it was. He handed me back the groceries, too. Don't you remember how some of the time Dad sneaks up in the morning and goes in the kitchen and when he comes out there's a big jug of milk? Ain't you ever wondered where that milk come from? You ever seen any udders on Dad? That milk come out of one of them big brown boxes they keep up on them high shelves. Pure D welfare food. And don't you remember that cheese? Who ever heard of cheese coming in a box as big as a loaf of bread? You ever try to pick one of them things up? Real cheese comes in hunks or slices, not no blanged loaf that weigh 40 pounds. I always thought there was something strange about that mess, and now I know. She been sneaking us welfare food, pure D welfare food. The cheese tasted okay to me, and except for a big powdery lump every once in a while, Dad's milk was all right too. But to try to get Byron back into his good mood, I acted real disgusted and said, "Aw, man." A week later, I was walking in the alley behind Mitchell's when a big cookie with pink frosting just about hit me in the head. It went by like a little flying saucer, then crashed in the dirt. I looked all around and didn't see anybody, so I put my hands over my face and stood still, because I knew if something weird like this happened once, it usually happened again. Sure enough, another cookie hit me right in the back, and a big laugh came out of the green apple tree. Byron. He dropped out of the tree like a superhero. He had a great big bag of cookies in one hand and a green apple with a giant bite out of it in the other. Want some? Bai tipped the bag of Swedish cream cookies at me. I knew this was a trick. The bag must have been empty, but I looked inside anyway. There was still a half a bag of cookies. Thanks! I grabbed 2 of the cookies and looked at them real good in case Bai had put bugs or something on them. They were clean, but I still kept waiting for the trick. Why would Byron waste 4 good cookies on me? Man, Swedish creams have got to be the best cookies in the world. I gulped them down and wiped my hands on my pants. I couldn't believe it. Bai tipped the bag at me again. He jumped up and snatched a green apple off the tree, checked it for wormholes, then handed it to me. You best eat some of this. Them Swedish creams is good at first, but they get kind of thick in your throat after a while. Byron was being too nice, so I knew something bad was about to happen. Then, I noticed a crumpled up Swedish creams bag on the ground next to the tree, and I could figure out why he was being so generous. He'd already eaten a bag and a half. A bell went off in my head. I knew now why he'd been so excited and happy when he found out about getting free food at Mitchell's. Bai was signing up for stuff that Mama and Dad didn't even know about. It was like he read my mind, because I was just about to say, ooh, bye, when he stopped being friendly and crossed his eyes at me and said, don't even think about it, Poindexter. You ate 2 of them yourself, so quit wasting my cookies and just shut up and enjoy what's left. He tipped the bag at me again. He had me. I couldn't tell on him, or else I'd be in just as much trouble as he would. I took another one. Bai went over to the green apple tree and slid his back against it until he was sitting down. I did the same thing right next to him, and we sat together munching. I wasn't used to being this friendly with Byron, so I guess I was kind of nervous and didn't really know what we should talk about. Bai just sat there chomping down apples, so I tried to think what him and Bubhead would talk about when they sat around like this. Finally, I said, so, Bai, how about you and me doing a little cussing? He twisted up his face and said, I thought I told your jive little ass to shut the hell up and enjoy the damn cookies. Now do it. I got a huge smile. This was a perfect day. But like always, Bai ruined it. Look! He pointed up at a telephone wire where a big bird sat. The bird was about the size of a pigeon and was grayish-brown with a long, pointy tail hanging underneath it. Bai jumped up and said, "That's a mourning dove. They're the coolest birds in the world. Don't nothing shake them up." Bai threw a Swedish cream at it. The cookie zipped right by the bird's head, and all the bird did was raise its wings once and look behind it. He threw three more cookies at the bird, and it still didn't move. When Byron's fourth Swedish cream left his hand, I knew that if the bird didn't move, he was going to get whacked. The cookie popped the bird smack jab in the chest. The bird's wings both stuck out to the side, and for a hot second, with its tail hanging down and its wings sticking out like that, it looked like a perfect small letter T stuck up on the telephone wire. Then, in slow motion, the bird leaned back and crashed to the dirt of the alley behind Mitchell's. I'd been throwing rocks and things at birds since I was born and had never even come close to hitting one. I'd seen a million people throw a million things at birds, and no one had ever really hit one, not even a pigeon. But now, Bai had knocked a bird right out of the sky with a Swedish cream cookie. When I got to Byron, he'd picked up the bird and was holding it in his hands. The bird's head drooped backward and was rolling from side to side, dead as a donut. "You got him! You got a bird!" Byron held the bird in one hand and with his other one gently brushed pink frosting off of the dove's chest. "You got him! I've never seen a bird get..." I looked right at Bai, and his face was all twisted up and his eyes were kind of shut. He dropped the bird, walked over to the green apple tree, and started throwing up. I stood there with my mouth open. I couldn't believe Byron was starting to cry. And I couldn't believe how much vomit a bag and a half of Swedish creams and some green apples could make. When it looked like he was done, I walked over and put my hand on his back. As soon as I touched him, he popped me in the arm, hard. "Bai, what?" He picked up a rotten apple and threw it at me. "Get the hell out of here. What you staring at? Them apples got me sick, you little cross-eyed punk. Get out of here." Rotten apples started coming at me real hard and fast, so I left. It was hard to understand what was going on with Byron. Some of the time, if a genie came and gave you three wishes, you wouldn't mind using all three of them to wish some real bad stuff on him. Not stupid things like that woman in the fairy tale when she wished her husband had a sausage on his nose either. I mean stuff that would make Byron hurt so much that he'd have to think every day about how mean he is. If he just had a sausage growing off of his nose, people might laugh at him behind his back, but no one would have nerve enough to tease him to his face and call him Weenie Nose or something. He wouldn't know how it feels to always have someone jumping on you, how sad that can make you get. Sometimes, I hated him that much and thought he was the meanest person in the world. After my arm quit hurting from his punch, I went back to the alley behind Mitchell's to take another look at the dead bird. But it was gone. Right in the spot where the bird had crashed, Bai had dug a little grave, and on top of the grave there were two popsicle sticks tied together in a cross. Leave it to Daddy Cool to kill a bird, then give it a funeral. Leave it to Daddy Cool to torture human kids at school all day long and never have his conscience bother him, but to feel sorry for a stupid little grayish-brown bird. I don't know. I really wished I was as smart as some people thought I was, because some of the time, it was real hard to understand what was going on with Byron. Every Chihuahua in America lines up to take a bite out of Byron. I was sitting at the kitchen table doing homework and watching Mama make dinner when Byron came